Some of you are regular members of this church. Others of you, maybe you've come along with family, with friends, and you love coming to church at Christmas time and to sing carols. Some of you love Christmas. We love all the preparations and the busyness that goes with this season and this time of year. And for others of us, because of life circumstances, this is a painful and a difficult time. But we have this moment together this evening to sing carols, to hear the Christmas story, and to celebrate the birth of Jesus. This moment together. And as well as all the things to do with carols and Christmas and coming here this evening, there is a load of other activity that has now become part and parcel of the Christmas season. So the shops seem to be ready earlier than ever. The John Lewis advert goes live, and it's as if someone has fired the starter gun and off we go. There's the tree to collect and ram into the boot of the car or to get down from the roof. There are the lights to untangle. There are the nativity costumes to create for the school nativity play. There's the office parties, Secret Santa, Amazon Prime, cards to send, emails to write. The list is endless. And if even just hearing that makes your heart beat a little bit faster, you're not alone. Maybe you find that you overreact when someone else gets that last packet of shortbread on the shelf at Sainsbury's, the very one that you were wanting. Or maybe you go into meltdown because your home Wi-Fi stops working on Christmas Eve. Christmas can feel like a stressful time of year. There's a psychological tool called the Holmes-Rahe scale, and it measures people's levels of stress, and it lists different activities, and it gives a number according to the level of stress. So the death of a spouse is 100 points, a divorce, 73, trouble with your in-laws gives you 29, and guess what else makes the grade? Christmas. Christmas is listed as a stressful moment in life. And maybe it's not difficult to see why. On little sleep, we try and shoehorn a whole week's worth of activity into a single day, every single day. And for our generation, although Christmas has always been a busy time of year, the stakes have been raised because we have the endless, infinite scroll of the perfect edited pictures of Christmas on Instagram. The golden turkey, the beautiful roast potatoes, dads walking through the snow in Christmas jumpers, smiling with two-year-olds on their shoulders, all edited to look their very sparkling best. But the problem is, we believe the lie, first of all, that that's reality, and second, that somehow we have to try and achieve this, effortless and perfect. So no undercooked turkey or overcooked sprouts, no difficult Uncle Fred, no overdraft, no norovirus, no Fortnite-obsessed teenagers, no lonely evenings, no disappointing gifts. In relation to Christmas, it seems that every year there is the must-have gift. And looking back over past years, I can remember things like the Rubik Cube, the Tamagotchi, that late-night trip to Manchester Toys R Us to get the very last Thunderbirds Tracy Island in the country. And then this year, there'll be those ones as well, the LOL dolls, the Roblox figures, Boppy the Shaking Llama, or even the Nerf gun Fortnite blaster, apparently for boys of all ages. You can still have time to get one. In relation to Christmas, I remember as a little girl, though, having quite a traditional present. I remember one Christmas being given a teddy bear. And as I opened that gift on Christmas morning, I wasn't to know that from that teddy bear, I was going to learn one of the most important lessons of my life. I remember the day as if it was yesterday. I was 10 years old and I had just gone to boarding school. It was my first day at school. And I remember waving goodbye to my parents. Someone had packed my trunk, but I had packed a little bag. And in this bag, I had put a felt tip pen, a pink notebook, and my precious teddy bear. It was well worn and much loved. And it was very precious to me. And I remember that first night, lying in the darkness and just wondering what the next day would bring. And then the matron popped her head around the door and she said, "Girls, Sarah in the next door room is crying. She's missing her mummy. Does anyone have a teddy bear she could borrow?" I remember holding this bear tight and then making a decision. And I gave it to the matron. And it felt good. It felt really good that I was helping Sarah and making her happy. But something else happened in that moment. I didn't realize it at the time, but I had made a decision that day that I was never going to be Sarah. I would never be the one that would admit to being weak. I would never be the one who would admit to needing a teddy bear because I was missing home. And I have spent so much of my life trying to live like that, trying to be the best lawyer, trying to be the perfect wife or the perfect mother. My gingerbread stars for the infant school Christmas fair would be the best. No sunken Victoria sponge for me. But I'm older now, and I have discovered that you can't live life like that. It is exhausting trying to live life as if you have something to prove. We can't live believing that our identity and our significance rests in our achievements. The Christmas story speaks into this. The Christmas story is full of vulnerability. And Sarah, age 10, had learned something that it's taken me a lifetime to learn. That we don't need to live as if we have something to prove. And that when you're 10, and when you're a little bit scared, and when you're missing home, it's okay to ask if a friend has a spare teddy bear. Our culture tells us and gives us the message that our value lies in what we own. Our worth is in what we look like. Our significance is in what we achieve. And the Christmas story stands against that message. It speaks a different message into our culture. The Christmas story tells us that we are loved not for what we own, not for what we look like, not for what we achieve, but for who we were made to be. And this is a message not just for those who are succeeding and want to be at the top of their game. This is a message also for those who feel as if they're at the bottom of the pile, who feel as if they're invisible, who feel sometimes as if they are overlooked. I heard a lovely story recently. Erin Mee is a care worker and she works in the north of England. And she speaks about some of the elderly people that she visits. She talked about Ralph. Ralph is 90. He lives by himself. He has very few visitors. When she visits him in the morning, he's sitting at the kitchen table looking out of the window. And he will still be sitting there at the end of the day. When she comes, he often accompanies her down the drive to the car in the hope that he might just meet someone, if he lingers there, who might say hello to him. At Christmas time, he hurriedly wraps up a little parcel and tries to give it to her, even though he knows it's against company policy. And on the mantelpiece, she notices it is her single Christmas card next to the clock, next to the china dog, that takes pride of place. And that Christmas card will be there well into the new year. That Christmas card is important because it says to him, someone loves me. I matter to someone. Someone has taken the trouble to write my name on an envelope, to write a greeting in the card. I am loved. And this is the heart of the Christmas story. Professor Glyn Harrison writes this. He says, human identity is not discovered within the self, nor autonomously constructed by the self. It is revealed to the self. In other words, God not only reveals who he is, but he shows us who we are. One of my very favorite childhood stories is The Velveteen Rabbit. And it speaks into this issue of our identity. And I want to read a little bit to you now, so kick off your shoes for a little bit of a story. It's just a paragraph. And the toys are talking to each other in the nursery. "What is real?" asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side near the nursery fender before Nana came in to tidy the room. "Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle?" "Real isn't how you are made," said the skin horse. "It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real." "Does it hurt?" asked the rabbit. "Sometimes," said the skin horse, for he was always truthful. "But when you are real, you don't mind being hurt." "Does it happen all at once, like being wound up?" he asked, "or bit by bit?" "It doesn't happen all at once," said the skin horse. "You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily or who have sharp edges or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, your eyes drop out, you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand." "I suppose you are real," said the rabbit. And then he wished he hadn't said it, for he thought the skin horse might be sensitive. But the skin horse only smiled. "The boy's uncle made me real," he said. "That was a great many years ago. But once you are real, you can't become unreal again. It lasts for always." What it means to be real, to be loved for who we are. This is the heart of the Christmas message. And the greatest need for each one of us this evening is to know that we are loved. The theme of the services here at Christchurch is Jesus, born the King of Angels. And on the way out, you'll see there's some beautiful banners with those words on. And they come from the verse of the well-known carol, "O Come All Ye Faithful," Jesus, born the King of Angels. How amazing that the perfect God in eternity, the King of all the angels, packages himself into flesh and is born as a little baby in Bethlehem in a manger for each one of us. And the incredible thing is that the main parts in the Christmas story are all played by people who are on the margins. There's a young girl who's pregnant before she is married. There are shepherds up on the hillside. They would have been on the very margins of society. And then there are three men, fortune tellers from the east, Gentiles, not Jews, the wrong people in the wrong place at the wrong time. And somehow in the upside down nature of the incredible Christmas story, they're treated as kings. But it's the final verse of that carol that really gives the heart of the Christian message. Because it's not only Jesus born the King of Angels, but it's Jesus born for our salvation. To understand the whole message of Christmas, we have to fast forward to Easter. Jesus is born and given the name Emmanuel, which means God with us. And the baby steps out of the Christmas story and lives as a man among us. He lives among governors and kings. He lives amongst the poor and the marginalized. And he loves each one. And he lives in order to die on a cross and take away everything that is wrong with our lives and to give us that new identity, a new life in him. This is the heart of Christmas. A while ago now, my husband Richard and I, we went to a Burns night celebration. It was not far from here, and it was a wonderful affair. The men were all dressed in black tie, the women were in evening dress, there were candles and champagne. And we went in, and there was a lady singing Robbie Burns songs. She had a beautiful voice. She'd been trained by the Welsh National Opera, and she was singing, "My Love is Like a Red, Red Rose." It was at that moment that another voice joined in the singing. This voice had clearly not been trained by the Welsh National Opera. And then the owner of the voice made an entrance. And he was an older man. He had an unkempt grey beard. He was wearing a dirty coat. He had a whiskey bottle in his pocket. And he was homeless. He hadn't got a ticket. He wasn't dressed for the occasion. Two young men got up and tried to usher him out because it was quite an awkward moment. And that's when it happened. From the far corner of the room, a guy got up. He was wearing a white tuxedo and a black bow tie. And he said, "It's okay. He can join us. There's room at this table for you." And here he is now. It's a picture of him sitting at that celebration. It's an amazing, amazing message. There's room at this table for you. And that's the message that the God of heaven speaks to every one of us this evening. We don't need a ticket. We don't need to be dressed for the party. But he says to each one of us, "There's room at my table for you." But even more amazing is the fact that we can make room at the table of our lives for God. I wonder if the innkeeper, if there was an innkeeper, with hindsight, if he looked back on that evening in Bethlehem, if he knew who it was that was asking for room at the inn, if he would have said, "I would definitely have made room for him." I wonder if when Mary spoke to Jesus as he was growing up, if she told him the story of when they went tired and stressed and looking for room, going from door to door, just trying to find someone that would let them in. Because right at the end of the Bible, the risen Lord Jesus in the book of Revelation says this. He says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone will listen to my voice and open that door, I will come in and eat with him and he with me." And that's the invitation that he gives each one of us this evening. This is the message of Christmas. There is room at his table for us. And we have the incredible privilege of inviting him at our table into our lives. And he says, "Come, come as you are. You don't need a ticket. You don't need to dress up for the occasion. You're loved as you are. No matter how far you have wandered, no matter how broken or confused or uncertain, he says, come. There's room at my table for you." Maybe you're already a follower of Jesus, and he wants to remind you again this evening to come back and to remember that there is room at my table for you. Maybe you used to follow Jesus, but over recent years, you have become distant from him. And he says to you this evening, come, there's room at my table for you. Maybe you're here tonight and you love coming to church at Christmas, but you've never really thought about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And he says, especially to you this evening, come. There's room at my table for you, for each one. There's a lovely carol that says this. It's "O Little Town of Bethlehem." And the third verse says, "No ear may hear his coming, but in this world of sin, where meek souls will receive him still, the dear Christ enters in." If you found your hearts have been warmed by hearing the message of Christmas this evening, in a moment, the choir are just going to sing that verse. And I would love to invite you to make that your Christmas prayer, to invite him to take his place at the table of your lives and hear him say to you, there is room at this table for you. And if you do that for the first time tonight, or if you just want to find out more about what it means to follow Jesus, on the way out this evening, the welcomers will have this book, Why Christmas, that explains a little bit more about the Christian faith. Or talk to one of the welcomers, anyone wearing a lanyard, and they'll tell you about how you can be involved in the things that we put on as a church family to help us all in our walk in following Jesus. Hear him say to you tonight, you are loved. There's room at this table for you. Lord Jesus, thank you that you are Emmanuel, God with us. I pray that each one of us would know this Christmas time what it means to invite you to the table of our lives. I pray that each one of us would hear you say to us, you are loved, you have nothing to prove, there is room at my table for you.